We're starting a special class from Harlap, a very, very pious Jew, a disciple of Rav Kook Zatzal, and we'll learn a little bit of what he wrote about prayer. It is the month of Elul. Oh, no, thank you. No. Ma'amarat fila. Madua, Rav Harlap asks, why, kom Yerushalim anu, why are we so incompetent, disorganized, not focused? The echut mitzvah tatfila. When we speak about the mitzvah of prayer, when we speak about the quality of our prayer, why is it that when it comes to our quality of prayer, we are so disorganized? Me'od ra'ui lanu, it is very fitting for us, lehitchakot achar shoresh hadavar. We should really look into, where does this come from? Why is it that our prayer is so disorganized and of such a poor quality? If a regular person speaks to someone who is honorable and great, even if he doesn't see a benefit from that conversation, and even if the content is disinteresting, it's not interesting at all. Nonetheless, the ability to talk to him, it broadens one's soul, it gives one a great feeling in all his aspects. If you thought tomorrow morning you were going to have a conversation with the leader of the Jewish people, you'd be very excited about it, even if you had nothing important to tell him. So how come we speak to Hashem and we don't have that same feeling? If we can only sense a little bit of that pleasantness that's within the order of prayer that the 120 elders, the men of the great assembly, prepared with their prophetic vision. Asham Varba Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud says, Sheshmonim Mayunavim, 80 of the 120 men of the great assembly were prophets. Ordinarily we say some of them were. The Jerusalem Talmud says 80 of the 120. Gamim lo namod al hasodot hanoraim hagnuzim batfilah, even if we don't really understand all those great secrets that are within prayer. Shikula razed razin sito de sitrin, because really prayer has so many secrets within it. Even the surface level, even the simplistic understanding implores of us to honor the prayer. We know the order of prayer. We begin by praising Hashem. We thank Hashem for the great luminaries, the sun, the moon. We accept upon ourselves Kriya Shema. Hashem is singular. Then you have 18 blessings of Shmona Esrei. Every request is within there. You just have to analyze it and understand it correct. And how wondrous and perplexing it is. We approach prayer that has so much depth, so much meaning, and yet we are completely unimpressed when we look at prayer. And we approach prayer out of a certain tranquility, disinterest. But we're not so concerned about the future, nor do we spend too much time fretting about the past. We pay our dues. We walk into shul, we daven, we did our thing, we move on with life. Why, says Rav Harlap? What's going on here? You agree with the question? Resonates with all of us. We understand where he's coming from. Nir'elanu, it would seem, says Rav Chalab, shehasiba pshuta lezeh hi hakrirut. It would seem that the basic reason is being cold. Namrot yidiyatenu ki hakol mimenu yitparach. Even though technically, analytically, we understand Hashem controls the world, terem chakuka yidiya balev, but we don't sense that in our heart. We can speak about it intellectually, but do we sense it? It's like something that if someone reminds you, you remember. We have such a thing in halacha. You don't think about it, but if someone reminds you, hey, you remember that? You say, yeah, I remember, sure. That's the way their bon shalom is in our lives. You remind the person, you know he's running the show, and he says, yeah, for sure. But is it a part of him? Does he sense it? But the truth is, sensing Hashem's existence, loving Hashem, is something that's really not, we're not there. So that's point one, says Rav Harlap. Hashem in our lives is something that we analyze, we understand, but we don't really sense.
Yeah.
Rav Chalap continues, Chazal amru, our sages said, Kol hakoveh makom letfilato lokei Avraham be'ezro. Whoever has a set place for prayer, then the God of Abraham assists him. Uchshemet, and when the person passes away, they say about him, Omrim alav eich hasidei anav. Whoa, we lost a pious person, we lost a humble person. If we look at the surface level of what our sages said, you have to have a set place to pray. Just like when you come to court, every judge has a place to sit. You don't rule on a court case in passing. Someone comes and asks you a halachic question, you sit down, you focus, you understand, you give an answer. Rav Chalap says there's another meaning to it. When our sages said have a set place for prayer, they meant a set place in your heart also. Am I a fly-by shooter? You know, one of the hardest things to do is to shoot a gun. Looks easy, right? It's not easy. Because to shoot a long gun so you can hold the barrel, you could hold, what's it called, the cock, what's it called, the handle of a long...
I thought you were talking about killing the person. You were talking technically.
Right, I'm saying no. Technically, to aim a gun, when you have a long gun, so you could hold it under your arm, you aim, you shoot, it stays in place. When you hold a handgun, just the movement of pulling the trigger moves the gun. So even if you aim, to hold it in place is very, very hard. You aim, but as you pull the trigger, the gun moves, and the slightest movement, you're off. So, I don't know what's about you, but when I was a kid, you could see these people that as they're running, they're aiming and shooting, right? It doesn't work that way. You want to get it right, you sit, you aim, you focus, you try to hold your hand steady, and as you pull the trigger, you try to keep it steady. Then you might hit the target, maybe. Yeah, so he says, when we speak about prayer having a set place, that means there's a set place by me. You want to run and shoot and you think you're going to hit a target, forget it. Same thing with prayer. You want to get something out of it? Well, there has to be a set place. There has to be within us a place that's serene, that's tranquil, that's set. Being that the foundation of prayer is to bring a person to connect to Hashem, the life of the world, blessed be He, you can't connect to Hashem without tefillah. It's a connector. You want to know why prayer doesn't have meaning? Well, that's because prayer is on the fly. If you don't settle down and focus on davening the Ribbono Shel Olam, well, what's the prayer going to do? Harei shamikriyut poselet bazeh. So then, the fact that things are on the fly, that's what disqualifies it. Kiman shei dabkut, bivchinat etzem v'amikre upirud. Because when you want to connect, there has to be sitting down. I always tell guys when they're dating, or when they're engaged, more accurately. What's going to happen? You're going to go shopping, and you're going to spend time with your bride, looking at beds and furniture and different things and holes and band. And at the end you'll tell her, okay, it was great seeing you and you're ready to go. And she'll say, we didn't spend any time together. And you'll say, we just spent 3 hours together. What do you mean? You want her to feel like you spend time together? Tell her, I want to sit down, right? I want to sit down for 5 minutes with you. Can we sit down for 5 minutes? And it's not only about your bride, it's the same thing with your children. One of the most meaningful things you can do to a child is tell him, I'm closing the phone. I want to talk to you. I'm shutting the phone. When you shut the phone and sit down with a child, what are you telling him? I'm with you. Real relationships are built when there's a focus. When I'm stopping what I'm doing and I'm with you. 5 minutes of focus are worth more than a half hour on the fly. There was once a rabbi who asked, I think it was Rav Aryeh Levine. He said to him, you visit people for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and they thank you and they feel like you changed their lives. I visit people for a half hour and they tell me you weren't with us. What's the difference? So the story goes that Rav Aryeh Levine said, when you walk in, you look at your watch and you tell them, I'm happy to be with you and I will work with you, but in a half hour I have to go. You don't take off your coat because you want to be focused on what they're discussing and you don't want to waste that time. You want to be ready to leave. They offer you a cup of tea and you say, I want to be very concentrated on what we're discussing, so I won't drink tea. And then you sit there trying to focus on what they want, but you're focused, but their feeling is you're on the way out. He said, I walk in, I hang up my coat. After I hang up my coat, I sit down and I ask them, maybe we'll bring down 2 cups of tea. They bring me the tea, I barely finish the tea, but the tea is there to give them a feeling, I'm here with you. Nothing else matters. I know I might have to leave after 10 minutes, but their feeling is I'm drinking tea with them. And then I'm with them, I try to finish the cup of tea before I go, and they've had 10 minutes of feeling that I'm there. Now that's true in interpersonal relationships, but that's also true as far as our psyche, not only the impression on the other person. If I walk into shul, I sometimes have a choice. There's a minyan where I know I have to catch a bus, let's say, at 9 o'clock, and I show up and there's a minyan that started at 8, and I could join them, and then I'll finish on time and catch my bus, but there's a minyan that starts at 8:30, and I could have 15 minutes early, but then I'm going to miss the last kaddish. I'm going to have to leave early. Which one's better? I find that it's better to join the 8:30 minyan, because if you can sit down before prayer and focus what you're doing, settle down in your mind, the whole tefillah is different. When you walk into a minyan and you're 5 minutes late, did you ever have a chance to focus your mind, to connect? Rav Harlap says, you want to know why prayer isn't meaningful today? It's because we do it on the run. Prayer requires stopping what I'm doing and being here. I want to tell you, you mentioned learning Torah. I'm going to share with you a secret. Okay? I have found, no one told me this, but in my own life, what I've found is that the most meaningful time for me to learn Torah is the last 10 minutes of the day. When I'm finished with everything else that I'm doing, and I'm ready to go home and go to sleep, I'm finished. No more obligations. The obligations that I have will wait for tomorrow. I'm done. I'm ready to go to bed. At that point, if I stop what I'm doing and I open a sefer and I sit down for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half hour, and I learn, whatever the time and the amount of focus I have, then I could focus because I'm not running anywhere. My day's over. I'm here. I'm ready to go to sleep. And suddenly, if I review what I've learned during the day or I learn something new, those 10 minutes are a different level of focus. It's a different learning. So you mentioned learning. I'm just saying this idea applies there too. Rav Harlap says, "Omnam me'echan nova yesod hakrihut hazeh." But where does this come from? That we're so haphazard, where we take prayer so lightly. Echti tamim eshala Avat Hashem sheblev kol chad v'chad m'Yisrael. How is it that the flame of connection, the flame of love that burns in the soul of every Jew has turned down? In bevaday shtei sibot rabot u'pratiyot, even though there must be many specific reasons, bechol zot ru'u la'amod al shoshei ha'machshela l'krirut b'avdat Hashem. But I want to discuss, he says, the roots of what's going on here. Obviously, everyone has their own reasons. Gentlemen, should we continue or pause here? So Rav Chalap says, Kol davar tov u'mo'il shebaolam, anything good, anything that's productive in the world, yesh elav netiyah tivit shel kol nefesh b'Yisrael. Hashem created us that every Jew has a natural inclination for that. We are inclined to be productive people. We are inclined to connect to that which is productive and good to the world. But that inclination can be directed. It's like a piece of clay, you can shape it. So we have an inclination to be productive people, but what will we do with that inclination? There's also a natural inclination to humility. But you know, even humility can become a corrupt humility, which is also pride. There's humility which is corrupt humility. Not every humility is right. I can't learn that. I'm not on that level. I can't pray that long. I'm not on that level. Humility is the idea that Hashem's in control and I understand my place. And if you want a greater definition of humility, humility is simply the recognition of truth. I recognize I'm not in control. I recognize my limitations. When we recognize ultimate truth, so then that recognition that He controls everything, so then it's a natural evolvement to say, what am I taking pride in? You know, the Ribbono Shel Olam did so much of this. True humility is the product of true honesty. Kevan shemida zot tiviti la'adam, being that this trait is natural to man, al ken kechol sheitkarev la'sig,
the
closer a person gets to that natural state of being, the greater is his happiness. Part of our frustration in life is that we think we have to produce. We have to produce, but we have to realize our limitations. Why are we under pressure? People tell you, I need 48 hours in a day. I'm always short 24 hours. People tell you it's too short a day to accomplish what I have to. Not true. You have to realize that you don't have to accomplish all that. It's not comfortable. We'd like to think we could, but we can't. We're a generation where the term overachiever, it's a misrepresentation. There's no such thing as an overachiever. In halacha, we call it a failure. An overachiever in halacha, when we speak in Torah, we say there's the amount you should achieve, and when you try to do more, you fail. Tafasta merube, lo tafasta. You're trying to get more than you can, you're not getting anything. That's a major flaw in our generation. People think they have to do everything, but you can't. You know the saying, jack of all trades, master of none? Well, when you're trying to overachieve, then you're really not achieving. You don't get a grasp on the things you should get a grasp on. The Torah teaches us to try and do things right. Part of doing it right is knowing what I can't do. The closer a person gets to that recognition, not everything's in my control, not everything's in my capacity, the more a person feels freedom. The less a person feels pressure. Sometimes things happen, even in a spiritual sense, where you feel like, I really don't want that outcome. And this can be the elections, where you feel like it's pikuach nefesh that this candidate gets elected. This can be in areas of the chavrusa you wanted to get. It can be the battalion you wanted to join. There can be things which you really want for the right reasons, and then they don't seem to work out the way you want to. And you say to yourself, but spiritually this was the right path, and now I'm not on that path. Wait a second, but it's not in your control, is it? You did what you could. So now why are you so upset? The more we connect to that humility, to that recognition that I'm not in full control, the more I can be calm, the more I can be free, the less depressed I'm going to be. Rav Harlap writes, you are more free mikol mu'aka, from any sadness. Part of the, or a major source of sadness, is frustration. Frustration at that which I don't control. But I have to come to terms with that which I don't control, and I don't have to be upset at that which I don't control. The more I come to terms with it, the happier I can be. The closer I can connect to what Rav Harlap calls pure nature. Pure in the sense of holy nature. Yeah.
Find the, like you said, the pure nature about it, however it was actually worded. Would to actually be upset and try to take control of a situation that you might not be able to control, would that be a form of arrogance? That's okay.
The devil's in the details. It's not always so defined what you can and cannot control. And that's why I gave an example where once you know you've done what you could and should, once you've applied the correct amount of hishtadlut, the correct amount of human effort, so then we have to be at terms with the fact that we don't control the outcome. And that's true for all of life. We do what we can. Parents are sometimes so frustrated with the choices their children make. But they are free people. You can help them. You can guide them. You can teach them. You can't control them. You can't control your baby. I have a 10-month-old. He doesn't let us sleep at night. I don't control him. I can tell him, I want you to sleep. I can try to put him to sleep. I can rock him to sleep. But he decides he's not sleeping. Come on, no, I don't have a night. He doesn't have a night. Who's in control? I'm saying even at 10 months, do I control him? There are things beyond our control. You don't control your kid when he's 10 months. You don't control your kid when he's 10 years. There are certain things where you could say, I don't want you to hang out with that crowd. I'm not going to let you go out at 1 o'clock at night. I'm not going to let you do this with your time. Yeah, there are areas of control. But at the end of the day, you don't control him. And when we come to terms with that, then we can be at peace with that. Yeah, for sure.
So then how are you supposed to know necessarily what is the limit of maximum control in the Shadur?
That's a good question. It depends on the matter at hand. And it's very hard to give a formula. How much? Usually we say within the confines of halacha is correct ishtadlut, but that's not enough either. Because even within the confines of halacha, there's going to be that question. That's a tough one. I would say that that's part of what a person can learn from a Rebbe, because I think that's part of the balancing act of maintaining a balanced Torah lifestyle. I think it's very hard, just reading the Torah and the Halacha, it's hard to know how much you're supposed to invest. Let's take the example of a shidduch. You want to get married. How hard are you supposed to work on getting married? Are you supposed to meet with every shadchan, every matchmaker in the book? Are you supposed to post yourself on every dating site in the book? And should you be dating three girls a day? Because maybe this one, and maybe that one, and maybe the next one. So obviously there comes a point where you say, that's ridiculous. But where is that line? You know, different people will draw that line in different places. Same thing with finding a job. When my wife was looking for a job, I sent out over 1,000 faxes with her resume. Over 1,000. You know, I did it through the computer so I could see. Every day we'd send out I don't know how many resumes, and we still didn't find a job. You know, later on it was through contact. It wasn't through all these resumes. Okay, you can't say that's over hishtadlut. If you didn't find the job, you got to keep trying. So you hear the number and it sounds too high. Why are you trying so hard? But you got to try. You need a job, so you go to the next interview. You go to the next interview. You try. It's a tough call. That's part of that's part of the balance you have to learn. I agree. I don't know of a text that'll teach it. I can say that that's one of the greatest things that I tried to learn from my teachers, because I think you see that with great people. We're learning Rav Charlap on prayer. But the more a person distances himself from this, the more a person frees himself from the yoke of heaven, so to speak, the more he will become entwined in that mud of being obligated to other people. Kiteva shela adam. Rav Charlap says a mind-boggling statement here. He says, the nature of man, Shemuchach liishtabed litochen kolshu. Man always wants to be subdued and in something's control. And if you think about it, you'll see the genius in what he's saying. We think we want to be free. No, we always want a system to guide us. So a person says, I'm a communist. I will fight for communism. A person says, I'm a socialist. I'm an environmentalist. But I have to be some ist. I'm a fascist. I'm an atheist, but there's always going to be some ism that I'm worshiping. If I'm not worshiping the Ribbono Shel'Olam, the nature of man, says Rav Charlap, is that we always need to have a system that we're adhering to. But Rav Charlap uses a harsher word. He says that we're subdued to, that we're subservient to. Vayishtabdut lemuchlat zehu achirut. When a person says, I'm subservient to the omnipotent, I am subservient. But I'm subservient to the Almighty, that is freedom. And that's when a person has a greater sense of well-being, a greater sense of tranquility. Sometimes a person looks up and says, the Ribbono Shel Olam is so awesome. One of the beautiful things when you leave the city, and you go out into what they call the shtachim. You go out into places where there's less. You don't have to go to shtachim. Just go to farmland. Leave the city and look out at night. Suddenly you see vast territory. You see a tremendous sky. You start thinking, the Ribbono Shel Olam's huge. And what can happen then? When a person thinks for a minute about how great Hashem is, he can enter a state of bitterness. Lomar ma'erech letfilat kutzei chomer mute amaz. To tell himself, what's my prayer worth? What am I? I'm a little bit of matter that was formed. My actions are so pitiful. Ad shemotzilaz alecha tefila, to a point where a person can speak badly of the value of prayer. Ki bazem yachsim shinui ratzon elav yitbarach. Because people think, I'm going to pray, I'm going to change God's mind. Who am I? What am I? What's my prayer worth? Nimtza shemitoch anava psula lazu mechaser matzmo kol chelka tova. So that's what Rav Harlap was alluding to. He says, there's humility that is disqualified, that's incorrect. When I say I'm worthless and so my prayer's worthless and I can't affect the world, here, a person has removed himself from the good of the world. And a person remains at that point where he does not clarify to himself, so what's going on here? He just stays at that point of disclarity, where a person tells himself, it doesn't make sense to me. And then you have this pounding thought in your mind, what's my prayer worth? And that stays there. And he never works it out. So long as a person hasn't worked out within himself the essence of prayer, the value of prayer, you walk into prayer and your soul is still complicated. It doesn't flow. You don't connect because you never worked out the idea. Wait a second, why does prayer work? What's going on here? So he says, one issue, he said, we have a problem, we treat prayer as a fly-by shooter, we're not focused. Number two, where does this come from? He says, because somewhere in our mind we have this trait of humility, but it's misapplied, and a person says, what's my prayer going to do? And finally, he concludes this thought, this section, another big issue we have with prayer is that we like to see concrete results. Man does not like to deal in the abstract. I can deal with theories so long as I see where those theories are applied. How many times do high school students ask the teacher, when am I ever going to use this in life? Why do I need to know Soka Toa? What does it matter? Sine, cosine, what difference does it make? How many times do students ask, where do binary codes come in? When you can explain to them that all of computers is built on that, now I understand, it's smart. But explain to me, why do I need to know derivatives? If I understand the practical application, I can deal with the abstract. But man has this tremendous urge to see outcomes, to see products. That's why if prayer is envisioned as a tool, I am using this to attain something. So if prayer is to achieve a result, so then prayer becomes weakened. So we have to understand there's more to prayer than just what I want. There's something else going on here. And we've just begun. This is Rav Harlap on prayer. We just learned the opening remarks. To be continued, Be'ezrat Hashem.